Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show. Conservative news and commentary addressing the issues that concern you here on the BBS radio and television network. Due to time constraints, I have to leave out a number of things I wanted to discuss today. Among them, I wanted to talk about the Minneapolis transgender church shooter, who, if I saw it correctly, on his, her social media video post before he attacked the church, on gun parts he showed, he had inscribed, among other things, that he wanted to kill Donald Trump. And also he had the words, again, if I saw it correctly, sponsored by BlackRock. He also complained in his video that he was tired of being transgender. He was a biological male who identified as female, and that he had been brainwashed. There's a lot I wanted to discuss more about this, but there isn't time with the other content we had to present. You can find a lot of good information about it on InfoWars, the Alex Jones show, in posts, shows that were aired right around the time of the shooting, right after the shooting. Anyway, so let's go ahead and get ready to our program content today. First, I'm playing two video clips related to the activities of the mobster George Soros. I have to agree with other commentators that Soros promotes communism and fundamentally hates humanity. These clips were posted on YouTube over the Labor Day weekend. The first is from the Redacted channel and mentions George Soros in connection with other actions being taken by President Trump in his ongoing campaign to save America. The second is from Dr. Steve Turley's YouTube channel and deals specifically with Trump's call to investigate and, if possible, prosecute Soros, whose supposed charitable foundations seem to always be heavily involved in financing organizations that finance or directly financing communist and other globalist organizations such as Black Lives Matter and Antifa, and fomenting anti-American riots and insurrection. Here are the videos.
Right now, our country is being rebuilt from the ground up. And I had to refresh my screen again and again when I saw this last week. What a turn of events in just under a year. I'm telling you, this Labor Day 2025, the ground is shaking beneath the globalist elite's feet right now. Look at these White House images. These were shot in the final days of the Otto Penn presidency, the Biden-Harris bought and paid for Obama-orchestrated administration, gave George Soros a Presidential Medal of Freedom. In your name, like on behalf of America, what a big middle finger. Yeah, in your name, in my name. It's just insane. Are they nuts? Yeah, they are. George Soros, the despicable, universally loathed billionaire demon who embodies pure evil through his insidious open society foundations and deliberate anarchy sowing all across the West, you know, supporting and funding violent protests in the United States, supporting the importation of illegal immigrants in the United States, the intent to dismantle civilization, indoctrinate the next generation to be serfs and sheep.
So USAID is actually funding Soros, and Soros is passing those funds to the people on the ground, the local politicians, the local judges, the local prosecutors, the local anti-corruption NGOs.
Just witnessed something that he never prepared for. I mean, this guy is Satan incarnate, by the way. He and the cabal network that had been funding the destruction of the West without interruption thought they got rid of Trump in 2020. And in their playbook, they couldn't in a million years believe that he'd rise from the ashes, win all seven swing states in a landslide, go for the jugular of the deep state so forcefully. I mean, this deep state Soros cabal even tried to kill Trump multiple times and failed. Butler, Pennsylvania, for crying out loud. Now, they wanted Hillary in 2016. They wanted Kamala in 2024. Can you imagine?
Hold on, everybody.
All of them puppets. But now they see the wrath of the red-blooded Americans, people like you and me, who are, frankly, fed the F up about this trans ideology in our schools, rainbow flags flying next to the American flags, jobs and manufacturing outsourced to Mexico, China, whole towns devastated by liberal policies. You know, just drive through downtown Denver. Go to like near Union Station. See homeless tents and once in a once shining American Western city. These people like George Soros that nearly took the Republic to the cleaners and flooded it with irreversible illegal immigrants that would have ended freedom and future rights for generations. I mean, just look at Canada, for instance, how that country has been absolutely transformed, or the UK collapsing right before our eyes. Thank God Trump got in there and shut down our border.
Not right
that
now.
The
Thank
United
you,
States has a secure border now that President Trump is in office, as opposed to when you were Secretary of Homeland Security. Do you have any regret facilitating an open border, sir?
So as this happens, as I mentioned at the top on this Labor Day, the 33-year deindustrialization of America, which transferred trillions into the pockets of elites, is finally making its way back to the people. And I want to be there myself with the bucket sort of facing the sky right now as it pours back to where it belongs with hardworking Americans that actually build and make America work, the backbone of this country. Right now, there is a massive fight going on behind the scenes. And in front of our eyes, we're seeing tectonic plates moving. Trump is maneuvering against the deep state's major institutions right now, arresting people, federalizing Washington, D.C. Crime has plummeted in that area. The mayor is even now admitting this. They're actually bringing in military lawyers to carry out military tribunals against these Satan criminals in Washington, D.C.
George Soros, the ultra-leftist billionaire and architect of the liberal globalist order, is about to face criminal charges. That's exactly what President Trump is calling for. Trump is officially calling for Soros and his dithering son, Alex, to face federal racketeering charges in an American court. Make sure to stick with me to the very end of this video because we're going to see precisely how this 95-year-old globalist has lived long enough to see his entire legacy implode. Hey gang, it's me, Dr. Steve, your Patriot Professor, here to help you make sense of the madness as the far left desperately tries to stop the unstoppable rise of a new conservative age that you're making possible all over the world. So if you want a front row seat on how you're changing the world in ways you never even imagined, you know what to do. Make sure to smack that bell and subscribe button. Also remember, registration for my America Awaken Masterclass is officially open. Now this is your exclusive chance to join me for a powerful 2-hour deep dive into the rise of a new American golden age that'll be written about and talked about for centuries. So don't miss out. Scan that QR code now and lock in your spot. And you can even register as a VIP and we'll get some time to chat personally at the event. So don't wait. Spots are limited. So click on that link below and register today. George Soros, the avowed enemy of Trump and MAGA, and who's personally financed color revolutions all over the world to deliberately overturn Democrat elections, is facing a bombshell. President Trump recently took to Truth Social with what can only be described as a political nuclear weapon. In a post that sent shockwaves to the political establishment, Trump declared, quote, George Soros and his wonderful radical left son should be charged with RICO because of their support of violent protests and much more all throughout the United States. And of course, at the time, he's referring to, well, I guess most recently, the Mexican flag waving riots in L.A. We're now learning that an organization called the Party for Socialism and Liberation, the PSL, was helping to finance these riots. This is the group that's linked to the CCP through funding from socialist billionaire Neville Singham and his wife, Jody Evans, who's the founder of the radical far left protest movement Code Pink. But what's so interesting here is that our good friend Data Republican, in her research, she's part of DOGE, she found that Singham and Soros tend to team up whenever they try to destroy and suppress populist movements around the world. And there may indeed have been some ties with Soros with the LA riots. Regardless, Trump is calling for Soros to face RICO charges, which stands, if you don't know, RICO stands for Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, which is a criminal statute originally designed to take down the mafia. When prosecutors invoke RICO, They're essentially arguing that you're running a criminal enterprise, not just committing isolated crimes. And so what's so key here is that for well over two decades, observers have documented troubling pattern. Wherever there is civil unrest in America and indeed around the world, George Soros's financial fingerprints seem to always appear. From the 2017 Charlottesville protests to the 2020 Black Lives Matter demonstrations, critics have, or going back to the Maidan Revolution back in 2014 in Kiev, that helped launch this crazy war that we're in right now, critics have consistently pointed to the billionaire's extensive network of funding as a common denominator. The numbers are staggering. Soros has poured over $32 billion into his Open Society foundations, creating what many have described as a vast web of influence that spans from local district attorney races to nationwide protest movements. I mean, when you follow the money trail, as investigative journalists have done repeatedly, you find Soros-backed organizations funding everything from bail funds for arrested protesters to political action committees supporting progressive prosecutors. And Trump's warning about Soros's crazy West Coast friends that he details there later on in his Truth Social post, that's not hyperbole. Again, as we saw with this partnership with the LA riots, it's a direct reference to a documented network of progressive mega donors who transformed California politics and are now exporting their model nationwide. These aren't conspiracy theories. They are documented financial transactions that show how billionaire misogynist, but they can effectively purchase political outcomes when all said and done. And they, in effect, have created a complex web of political networks that can be discerned when you simply follow the money. You know, speaking of that, I mean, I got to say, following the money trails in politics does require some serious mental acuity and clarity. And I need to tell you about something that's been an absolute game changer for my research process. Did you know that most methylene blue being sold online is the same grade used in fish tanks? I kid you not. Watch out for low quality bottles that are untested for heavy metal and made overseas. Instead, you can trust the wellness company's Recharge, a doctor-formulated supplement combining powdered methylene blue with NAD plus and PQQ. This methylene blue is USP grade, ensuring top-tier purity for maximum safety and effectiveness. In other words, it ain't the sketchy stuff you're gonna find on Amazon. Recharge is formulated with research-backed ingredients to optimize brain function and cellular repair while supporting clean, lasting energy. Tap into cognitive and metabolic support that helps you stay energized, focused, and resilient all day long. Choose a trusted formula made for your body, not for fish tanks. Feel the difference with enhanced mental clarity, sustained energy, sharper focus, and protection against cognitive decline. And no, it won't turn your tongue blue. Head on over to twc.health/Turley and use code Turley to get 15% off plus free shipping. Again, that's twc.health/Turley. Use code Turley for 15% off. Now, let's not forget the indirect but documented connection to Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg's campaign. Remember, Bragg was bankrolled by Soros. Soros donated $1 million to the Color of Change, which then turned around and supported Bragg's campaign. I mean, we learned this pattern from when Doge uncovered USAID, which we found out was just one big slush fund. So you pour tons of money into these so-called pro-democracy, pro-humanitarian organizations, which then in turn just fund to the tune of tens of millions of dollars far-left causes and candidates. It was all part of this very sophisticated funding mechanism that allowed billionaires to influence local politics while maintaining plausible deniability. That is until, of course, they were all effectively doged. Soros, unfortunately for him, is increasingly getting doged all over the world as well, and rightfully so. The scale of Soros' influence cannot be understated. It can't be understated. His Open Society Foundations operates in over 120 countries, making one of the largest private philanthropic networks in human history. In the 2022 midterm elections alone, his Democracy PAC was the largest single donor for Democrats, contributing $125 million to progressive causes and candidates. But here's what makes Trump's RICO threat particularly significant here. RICO cases don't require direct evidence of criminal activity. They focus on patterns of behavior and organizational structures. So prosecutors could demonstrate that Soros's various foundations and political action committees operate as a coordinated enterprise to fund activities that cross legal boundaries. The implications would be absolutely enormous. And keep in mind, this is happening at the same time that Soros's Open Society Foundations are experiencing massive losses in funding. So his son Alex recently announced that they were significantly reducing all operations in the European Union. And that announcement came on the heels of reports that Soros's foundations were experiencing mass layoffs following the leadership transition to his son Alex. So in an emailed statement, the organization announced plans to cut almost half, you heard that right, half of their global workforce. And many have noted that these massive cuts, along with the withdrawal from the EU, all raises the question of the continued relevance and influence of Soros's infamous plans for a new world order, which is exactly what he called it back in 1991. And that's really the rub in all of this. This isn't a matter of whether you support or oppose Trump's specific tactics in going after Soros. It's whether you understand the broader implications of billionaire political influence in American democracy. When a single individual can effectively purchase prosecutors, fund protest movements, and influence elections across multiple states simultaneously, we're no longer talking about living in a viable democracy. He can spew about democratic norms till he's blue in the face. Whenever a nation votes in a way that Soros doesn't like, he always writes checks to activists for the purpose of overthrowing the democratically elected government. We've seen it time and time and time again. The genius of Trump's approach is that it forces a long overdue conversation about the limits of political influence by invoking RICO, the same statute used against organized crime. Trump is essentially arguing that coordinated billionaire political networks have crossed the line from legitimate advocacy into something far more nefarious and far more dangerous. Trump's threat to monitor Soros and his associates signals a new phase in this conflict. The days of Soros being able to call the shots around the world as he sees fit are over. Many have asked on a number of occasions how and why this guy, of all people, is living so long. Perhaps it's so that he can see his evil legacy implode.
Elon Musk, the world's richest man, played, in my opinion, a pivotal role in getting Donald Trump reelected last year. Since Musk does major business with Communist China, he therefore must tread carefully when dealing with and discussing the Chinese Communist Party, I believe. But Musk correctly recognized the dangers this country is facing and has put everything he has on the line in recent years, and particularly last year's election, to defend freedom, free speech, and to save America. He's been putting out a number of videos lately on YouTube under the channels labeled Mind to Goals, Zero to Vision, Future Focus, and more. In many of these, he is predicting an economic and financial apocalypse he believes is coming this year and makes recommendations on how to prepare for it. In this video from Musk we're showing on today's program, Musk discusses deep state Washington swamp rat John Bolton and how Bolton is typical of an elitist ruling class that endangers our civilization. Bolton was Trump's national security advisor in Trump's first term before Trump fired him as Bolton turned on Trump. Bolton has been a caustic critic of Trump ever since. If you don't know, the FBI recently raided Bolton's home and office, collecting computer equipment and documents. Bolton is reportedly under investigation for potentially mishandling classified material he had access to as National Security Advisor.
Bolton was what we might call a creature of the Sunday talk shows. He was everywhere on television, making the case that Trump was dangerous and reckless. He just wouldn't stop. It became an obsession. And he really believed that after the 2020 defeat, after the 6th of January, after all the legal troubles that followed, Trump was finished. Anyone who knew Trump understood that he's what you might call a Nietzschean figure. The more they tried to destroy him, the stronger he would get. But Bolton, like so many others in that elite circle, completely misread the situation. He's like Bill Kristol, John Kasich, Mitt Romney, all these people who went after Trump and then found themselves politically irrelevant. They thought they were on the winning side of history, but they forgot something crucial. They had lost touch with the people who actually vote, who actually work for a living, who actually struggle with rising grocery bills and rent payments. And that's where Bolton's story connects to your story, whether you realize it or not. Because the same arrogance that led Bolton to think he could manipulate classified information for his own purposes is the same arrogance that's been systematically undermining the middle class for decades. Let me paint you a picture of how this works. The Democratic Party, and I'm not trying to be partisan here, this is just observable reality, made a calculated decision sometime in the 1992nd and 2002nd. They looked around and said, "We don't need the middle class anymore. We are the wealthy people, but we're the good wealthy people." They partnered with the professional classes that benefited from globalization. We're not just talking about billionaires and multimillionaires, though they were certainly part of it. We're talking about the next echelon down the coastal university classes, the people with credential letters after their names, the folks who could still afford to buy homes in expensive areas, who could buy imported cars, who could send their kids to prep schools. This group convinced itself that they had solved the existential problems of the world: climate change, social justice, global governance. These became their priorities. Meanwhile, the practical problems that middle-class families face every day: how do I buy a house? How do I afford groceries? How do I pay for electricity? How do I send my kids to college without drowning in debt? These concerns were dismissed as the complaints of people who didn't understand what was really important. Middle class was labeled as clingers, deplorables, chumps, drags, and garbage. The assumption was that these were the losers of globalization, people who didn't learn how to code, as Joe Biden once said, or who didn't understand that their coal plants were going to be shut down anyway, so they should just accept it. Now, here's where it gets really revealing about the mindset we're dealing with. Remember that woman who went viral after some celebrity event, telling people they shouldn't go to restaurants because Mexican nationals are cooking, and suggesting they should just get over there to Cracker Barrel? The corporate elite heard this and thought, oh my gosh, we can't be associated with this kind of thinking. But here's the thing, the CEOs making these decisions are mostly MBAs from elite universities. They live in the same bubble as the political class. They thought they could be really clever. They'd quietly remove anything that might appeal to what they saw as white nationalist or white supremacist customers. And nobody would object to changing a corporate logo, right? What they didn't understand is that average Americans aren't stupid. When Cracker Barrel starts removing images that reflect rural working class culture, people understand exactly what's happening. They're being told, essentially, we don't want your business because we don't like you and we think you represent something shameful about America. The same thing happened with Bud Light's partnership with a transgender influencer, or Target's Pride Month displays in ways that seemed designed to make traditional families uncomfortable. In each case, corporate leaders thought they were being sophisticated, appealing to the values of their fellow elite while avoiding any real controversy. But what they discovered is that there's a breaking point. People get sick of being mocked, dismissed, and told that their values and concerns don't matter. And when that backlash comes, it's not just about beer or retail stores. It's about a much deeper sense that the institutions that are supposed to serve all Americans have been captured by a relatively small group of people who actively dislike a large portion of the country. this connects directly back to John Bolton, because it's the same mindset. Bolton thought he was serving the right people, the people who mattered, the people who would appreciate his insights and buy his books and invite him to the right dinner parties. He never stopped to consider that the classified information he was using might belong to the American people as a whole, not to him personally. He never considered that his timing releasing damaging material about a sitting president during an election might undermine the democratic process he claimed to be defending. The truth is, Bolton's actions and the corporate elite's actions both flow from the same source. They've convinced themselves that they're smarter, more moral, and more important than the ordinary Americans whose lives are affected by their decisions. They think they know what's best for you better than you do. And this brings us to something that might surprise you, how our universities became factories for this kind of thinking. When I was younger, universities were certainly left-leaning, but they were liberal left-leaning. There was still room for debate, still some connection to the practical needs of society. But over the past few decades, they've become what I can only describe as North Korean left-wing institutions. These universities now see their role as training the new administrative state class. The diplomats, lawyers, administrators, clerks, media people, and bureaucrats who will staff the government and major corporations, and they're all being indoctrinated with the same basic message: ordinary Americans are the problem. Traditional American values are obstacles to progress. The middle class is selfish and ignorant and needs to be managed by people who know better. The universities stopped being American institutions and became global institutions. Their goal became training people who would see themselves as citizens of the world first, Americans second, if at all. They developed billion-dollar endowments by charging foreign students premium prices, and they used that money to fund radical DEI programs and hire faculty who actively despise the culture and values of the students' own country. This is where people like Bolton come from, not necessarily universities directly, but from the same mindset that sees America and Americans as problems to be solved rather than people to be served. Now, here's where this story takes a turn that directly affects every family in America, especially those of you who've watched your neighborhoods change over the decades. The same people who captured the universities had another brilliant idea. They were going to change the demographics of the country itself, and they were going to do it in a way that would permanently lock in their political power. This wasn't some conspiracy theory. They wrote books about it, books with titles like Demography is Destiny and The New Democratic Majority. They were triumphalist about it. They openly celebrated the strategy. But when people like Tucker Carlson pointed out what was happening and said they're deliberately changing the composition of American communities, suddenly it became the sick great replacement theory that no decent person was supposed to discuss. Let me tell you how this worked in practice. Ted Kennedy and, I'm not picking on Democrats here, Republicans went along with this too, essentially made it impossible for Europeans or affluent people from places like Japan to immigrate easily to America. Instead, the focus shifted to what they called family reunification across the southern border. Reagan signed immigration legislation in 1986 that was supposed to be a one-time amnesty, but it opened the floodgates instead. They took Border Patrol agents off the border and made it the employer's responsibility to check I-9 forms, forms that were easily forged, and everyone knew it. The result? We now have about 50 million people living in America who weren't born here, which is an all-time high of about 15 to 16% of the population. About 30 million of them are here illegally. Now, the political calculation was simple. This is our new constituency. These are people who will vote for the party that promises them the most government benefits and the most protection from immigration enforcement. But here's what they didn't count on, and this is important for you to understand. It didn't work out exactly as planned. Second-generation Mexican-Americans started voting more conservatively. More Asian immigrants than expected started supporting traditional values. The demographic strategy that was supposed to guarantee permanent political control began to backfire, finally becoming obvious in 2024. But the damage to the middle class was already done. When you bring in 30 million people who will work for below-market wages, what do you think happens to wages for everyone else? When you suddenly need housing for 50 million additional people, what happens to housing costs? When school systems designed for one population suddenly have to accommodate much larger numbers, what happens to educational quality? The elite response to these obvious consequences was to shame anyone who pointed them out. If you said, my kid's school is overcrowded and my property taxes keep going up, but the quality is going down, you were called a racist. If you said, I used to make decent money in construction, but now I'm competing with crews that undercut everyone, you were called a xenophobe. If you pointed out that your neighborhood had changed in ways that made you uncomfortable, you were clearly a white supremacist who needed to be educated about diversity and inclusion. Meanwhile, the people making these accusations lived in zip codes where none of these problems affected them personally. They had private schools for their kids, private security for their neighborhoods, and jobs that couldn't be undercut by imported labor. For them, demographic change was an abstract moral question that allowed them to demonstrate their virtue and superiority over the supposedly ignorant masses. This is exactly the same arrogance we see in John Bolton's story. He thought he could use classified information for his own purposes because he convinced himself he was serving a higher good, stopping the dangerous Trump. The people who engineered mass immigration convinced themselves they were creating a more just and diverse America, even though the main result was to crush economic opportunities for working-class Americans of all backgrounds. And if you want to see how deep this mindset goes, just look at how they talk about you when they think you're not listening. We've had prominent figures on television saying things like, what have whites ever done with music? What have whites ever given the world? They're stupid. They can't think. Now imagine if someone said equivalent things about any other racial group. Their career would be over immediately. There would be no sponsors, no advertisers, no platform. But when the target is white, working-class Americans, it's not only acceptable, it's celebrated as speaking truth to power. This isn't just about hurt feelings. It's about a systematic effort to demoralize and marginalize the people who built this country, who still do most of the essential work, and who represent the largest voting bloc. When you convince people they have no legitimate interests, no valid concerns, and no moral standing to object to policies that hurt them, you can get away with almost anything. The people pushing these narratives didn't realize that 67% of the country identifies as white, and they don't appreciate being told they're inherently evil. They didn't realize that working-class Americans of all backgrounds have more in common with each other than with coastal elites of any color. They didn't realize that their constant demonization would eventually create a permanent backlash. And now we're seeing that backlash. People are sick of it. They're sick of being told that everything wrong with America is their fault. They're sick of seeing their tax dollars go to support people who entered the country illegally while they struggle to afford housing and health care. They're sick of watching their cultural institutions mock their values and dismiss their concerns. This is why Trump's recent decision to deploy the National Guard in Washington, D.C. is so interesting. For 8 or 9 days, there hasn't been a murder in Washington, something that hadn't happened in years. But instead of celebrating this improvement in public safety, the same people who claimed Trump was a fascist are now complaining that it's only temporary, that he's only going to keep the guard there for 30 days. Think about the logic here. They said he was going to be a dictator who would never give up power. Now they're complaining that he's limiting his intervention to 30 days. They admit that crime will probably return when the guard leaves, which means they're acknowledging that the intervention is working, but they're angry about it anyway. Why? Because if Donald Trump does something that helps ordinary people, they have to oppose it, regardless of whether it makes sense. If he wants to secure the border, they're suddenly for illegal immigration. If he wants to stop crime, they're suddenly pro-crime. It's a purely reflexive response that puts them on the wrong side of public opinion every single time. This is the same dynamic we see with John Bolton's files and the broader pattern of elite behavior. They choose their positions based not on what's good for the country, but on what's opposite to what Trump or what ordinary Americans want.
Lastly today, let's watch and listen to what for me is a great take and analysis on those opposing Trump's tariffs and tariffs policy, and who are seeking to halt all tariffs, which would be an absolute economic disaster for the U.S. As you might imagine, the narrator, Zach DiGregorio, on his Wolves and Finance channel on YouTube, implicates communist China and their sellout lackeys in this country. These people, to me, are so blind with their opposition to Donald Trump and his policies, be it just for venal monetary gain or actual communist ideological hatred, are appallingly stupid and can't see that many of them will be destroyed along with the rest of us, our lives, that is, in the totalitarian state they seek to impose on America.
Last week, a federal appeals court ruled to cancel Trump's tariffs. The battle is going to the Supreme Court next. I've been doing some digging into this case, and what is actually going on is shocking. I'm going to show you what is being covered up by the mainstream media. Let's start with a big picture question. Are the Trump tariffs unfair? If you remember, on April 2nd, Trump held a press conference he called Liberation Day, where he announced sweeping tariffs.
If you look at that, China, first row, China, 67%. That's tariffs charged to the USA, including currency manipulation and trade barriers. So 67%, I think you can, for the most part, see it. Those with good eyes, with bad eyes. We didn't want to bring, it's very windy out here. We didn't want to bring out the big charts because it had no chance of standing. Fortunately, we came armed with a little smaller chart. So it's 67%. So we're going to be charging a discounted reciprocal tariff of 34%. I think, in other words, they charge us, we charge them, we charge them less. So how can anybody be upset? They will be, because we never charged anybody anything, but now we're going to charge.
So China was charging us 67% tariffs. Let me stop there. Just let that sink in. If an American company wanted to sell goods in China, they would charge us a 67% tariff. What Trump was proposing was going from the U.S. charging China no tariffs to charging only 34%. So we would be charging them half of what they are charging us. How is that unreasonable? I think it is unreasonable that the U.S. was charging 0% tariffs while they are charging us 67%. And it's not just China, it's all the countries. What Trump was proposing in most cases was to charge countries half the rate they were charging us. Now, the argument against Trump's tariffs was that it was going to destabilize the economy and crash the stock market. But it has been 5 months since these tariffs were announced in April. Not only has the stock market not crashed, it has skyrocketed. This is the S&P 500. This is when the tariffs were announced. This is where we are today. In fact, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent has been reporting that the tariffs have been incredibly successful in raising money.
Well, look, the president's tariff plan brought in more than $28 billion in July, a fresh monthly high. Tariffs are becoming the third largest source of income for government. And the last time you were with me, you told me that you would expect $300 billion in tariff revenue. But I think you are increasing that expectation right now, aren't you?
I am. So I think August, September is going to be a very good test. I've been saying that I think we can take in $300 billion. And you know, as the Treasury Secretary, I like to be conservative, but there is a chance that I'm going to have to substantially upgrade that number. And Maria, the way to think about it for your viewers is every $300 billion is 1% of GDP.
They are forecasting $300 billion a year, the third largest income source for the government. So again, I will ask the big picture question here. Are the Trump tariffs unfair? They are bringing in tons of money. The economy is doing great. It's only half the tariffs that other countries are charging. Who is against these tariffs? And yet, someone is battling in court to overturn the tariffs. What is really going on here? Are these people who actually care about the tariffs, or are they just trying to get Trump? Let me explain the court case. After Trump announced his tariffs, he was sued by two groups of people. One was a group of five small businesses that dealt with imports and exports: a winery, a plastic pipe manufacturer, a company that made science kits for children, a company that made fishing tackle, and a company that made cycling clothing. The second group was a group of states including Oregon, Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Illinois, Maine, Minnesota, Nevada, New Mexico, New York, and Vermont. As you can tell, these are all states with Democrats in power. So already you can see that this is politically motivated. This is not really about the merits of the case. This is about getting Donald Trump. The lower court ruled against Donald Trump, who appealed the decision. Now the federal appeals court has ruled against Trump. The appeals court has 11 judges. Seven ruled in favor of terminating Trump's tariffs, and four judges opposed the ruling. Of the seven judges in favor, four of those judges wrote an even more extreme concurrence opinion claiming that the appeals court did not go far enough. The appeals court just overturned these specific tariffs, but the concurrence opinion argued that Donald Trump should not be allowed to issue any tariffs in the future. This was a devastating outcome for Donald Trump. His only option is to challenge the decision at the Supreme Court. The tariffs will all remain in place until October 14th, giving the Supreme Court time to make a decision. But if the Supreme Court does not overturn the appeals court, it would cancel the majority of Donald Trump's tariffs.
Saying regarding that federal appellate court that ruled against you and your administration as it relates to your ability.
Well, they ruled against our country, the court, and they ruled against us before. It's a very liberal court. We're going to be going to the Supreme Court, we think, tomorrow, because we need an early decision. I mean, look, the financial fabric of our country, we're a rich, incredible country right now, and we're able to, you know, other countries use tariffs on us for years, and we never did.
When Donald Trump talks about liberal judges, let me show you what he means. One of the judges who was part of the extreme concurrence opinion was named Leonard Stark. He is from Joe Biden's home state of Delaware. He was originally nominated to be a judge by Barack Obama. Before that, he worked as a co-coordinator for Michael Dukakis' presidential campaign against George H.W. Bush. He was also an alternate delegate for Bill Clinton's campaign. This is someone who has been deeply involved in Democrat politics, and now he is attacking Donald Trump. But it gets crazier. These five businesses that are suing are very small businesses. How is it that these extremely small businesses are setting the economic policy for the entire country? They don't have the resources to sue the government and take the case to the Supreme Court. How are they doing this? It turns out that their case is being completely paid for by a group called the Liberty Justice Center. Guess who funds a large part of the Liberty Justice Center? A Republican billionaire named Charles Koch. Charles Koch has been a big money donor for the Republican Party for years, and he does not like Donald Trump. He formed a group called the Americans for Prosperity that spent $42 million trying to ruin Donald Trump's campaign. Do you remember Nikki Haley? Their goal was to try to get Nikki Haley to beat Donald Trump as a Republican candidate. Do you understand what is happening? It is the Republicans who are trying to use this lawsuit to take out Donald Trump. Charles Koch is a billionaire who did not get his way during the election, and now he is funding this lawsuit through the Liberty Justice Center. In my opinion, this is a vindictive, petty billionaire who is willing to destroy the U.S. economy because of his own Trump derangement syndrome. Let me explain why I think Charles Koch is doing this. This is all allegedly, because obviously I cannot read his mind. But in my opinion, this is what I think is going on. Charles Koch owns one of the largest privately held companies in the world, with a large presence in China. It has been reported that Charles Koch employs more than 23,000 people in China. With such a major portion of his business operating in China, there is a real possibility that he is being blackmailed by the Chinese Communist Party. At any moment, the Chinese Communist Party can tell Charles Koch that he can no longer do business in China. There are many examples of the Chinese Communist Party pressuring foreign business owners just like this. China obviously wants to go back to their old arrangement where they paid zero tariffs. So what we see happening is an alignment where you have the Chinese Communist Party the Republican Uniparty, and the Democrat judges in D.C. all working together with this court case to try and get Donald Trump. Let me explain what the law actually says. Donald Trump issued these tariffs under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, or IEEPA. This gives the president broad authority to regulate a variety of economic transactions following a declaration of national emergency. So the president will declare an emergency and then order the economic transactions, whether it's through sanctions or tariffs. In the case with Trump, he declared two emergencies, one on the drug crisis and one with our growing budget deficit. These are both huge problems that can be solved with tariffs. This same process under the IEEPA is how the U.S. has operated for decades. Here's a chart showing some of the actions taken under the law. One example is Iran. The president identified that there was a problem with Iran. He declared it an emergency, and we have been using different economic sanctions against Iran for the last 40 years. Now let's look at the actual wording of the law. It is extremely broad. 1702A1B says, presidential authorities, the president may regulate importation or exportation. This seems pretty clear to me. I'm showing it to you in black and white. Congress wrote this law, giving the president the power to regulate imports and exports. They did this because obviously Congress cannot pass a bill every time the president negotiates with a foreign country. The president needs that power, which is why it is in the bill. If Congress feels that the president ever oversteps his authority, they have the opportunity to pass a resolution telling him to stop. They have decided not to. So now we have a handful of liberal judges in D.C. deciding how the president should implement global economic policy. Their argument is that the law does not specifically include the word tariffs. They are claiming that the law gives the president the power to regulate through other means except for tariffs. The law does not say that, but they think that is implied. I think that is a very weak argument. If we go back to my original example, China was charging the U.S. 67% tariffs. According to these judges, they say the president should not be able to do anything about that. I think that's ridiculous. The American people want the tariffs, the president wants the tariffs, the Congress agrees with him, and these judges are trying to seize power and overturn the other two branches of government. This is not right. The courts cannot just write new laws on how they think tariffs should be implemented. And the law is written very clearly that President Trump has this power. Now, I do not want to oversell the public support. Most polls show roughly 60% of Americans oppose the Trump tariffs. But this level of support is not unusual for a hotly contested issue. In fact, I would argue this is a much higher level of support than most political issues. It is clear that an enormous amount of Americans want these tariffs. Let me explain to you what will happen if the Supreme Court does not overturn this decision. It will destroy the entire global economy overnight. Number one, all the new trade agreements are going to be contested. For the last 5 months, the U.S. has signed all new deals with countries from Europe to South Korea. They are all going to tear up their agreements. Number two, all the countries that have paid tariffs so far are going to ask for refunds. I really don't know how this is going to work. We are somehow going to have to pay back all the billions of dollars we have received. How? We've already spent the money. How are we going to pay this back? Number three, it will undermine the president's ability to negotiate around the world. This is the worst, because all of a sudden the courts are going to take away the power of the president to negotiate economic deals around the world. How is the president going to conduct any kind of foreign policy? It's going to be a disaster.
It's a very important decision. And frankly, if they make the wrong decision, it would be a devastation for our country. We've taken in trillions of dollars. And by the way, all these countries signed agreements. As an example, they signed, they're all happy. Everybody's happy. But some whack job put in a lawsuit. If you took away tariffs, we could end up being a third world country. That's how big the ruling. So we're asking for an expedited ruling.
I cannot emphasize this enough. If the Supreme Court does not overturn this decision, it will destroy the global economy. Not just the U.S., the entire world. Because all of a sudden, the President of the United States will not be able to make global economic deals. Everyone is impacted. These recent court decisions are so absurd. We have the Chinese Communist Party and a petty billionaire trying to screw over the American people. Can these judges for once stop trying to get Trump and instead try and do what is right for the American people? Now, most people have been thinking that the Supreme Court will overturn this decision, but I am not so sure. Charles Koch has been a driving force in the Republican Party for a really long time. He knows the Supreme Court justices. Here's a photo with Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas standing next to documentary filmmaker Ken Burns and David Koch, who was Charles Koch's brother. This was at a Koch Network donor event at the Bohemian Grove in Northern California. Here's a photo of Charles Koch wearing a hat with the logo of the Grove showing an owl. Here's a photo of the schedule showing Justice Clarence Thomas as a speaker at the Bohemian Grove. Justice Neil Gorsuch and Justice Brett Kavanaugh both took teaching contracts at George Mason University in Virginia, which sent them on all-expense-paid trips, which covered their travel and living expenses to Italy, Iceland, and England. At this same time, a $10 million contribution was made to the program by the Charles Koch Foundation. My point is that there is no guarantee that the Supreme Court is going to side with Donald Trump on this case.
That's all for our show today. As always, we hope you found today's content of interest and value. You can watch and or listen to a podcast of today's show when it's posted shortly here on the Jim Benson Show pages at bbsradio.com/The Jim Benson Show. And elsewhere on the internet, including x.com at JamesB5030-91977. Also on rumble.com and Apple Podcasts. While you're at it, if you visit my pages here at bbsradio.com, scroll down on my index page at bbsradio.com/The Jim Benson Show and check out our related videos section near the bottom of the page. Look for us again 2 weeks from today in this same time slot with another episode of our show. Have a great rest of your day and evening.